The Douglas Post Office has been spared, at least for now. A new postal service plan to reduce hours at thousands of post offices nationwide appears to give a reprieve to five Alaska facilities slated to close later on this spring. Postmaster General Patrick Donahue yesterday said customers had convinced agency officials to consider other options. Now the Postal Service is proposing different levels of service at 13,000 post offices, including 88 here in Alaska. Douglas is not on that list, nor are post offices at Elmendorf and Eielson Air Force Bases and Fort Wainwright and the Anchorage Postal Store. Alaska District Spokesman Ernie Swanson says the five facilities could still be closed.
The status of those offices is still unresolved. They still may be saved, if you will. We just won't know for a while. Until we hear further internally, we still have them on the list for possible closure.
Swanson says the postal reform bill that passed the U.S. Senate last month states that the Postal Service cannot close any post offices for a year without further study.
They've also said we need to look at things like, is there a post office within 10 miles? Does the community have internet service so that they could do things on the internet?
But the House needs to pass the measure, and Swanson says decisions are on hold until that happens.
We don't necessarily have to wait for the House legislation, but we feel that's the right thing to do.
Congressman Don Young is part of a group of lawmakers hoping to force U.S. House leaders to bring the bill up for a vote. He applauded yesterday's Postal Service decision. Senator Lisa Murkowski said she had been assured the five Alaska post offices will remain open for the near future and be reviewed again at a later date. Meanwhile, Douglas citizens are relieved their post office will remain open, at least for now. A bouquet of red, white, and blue flowers sits on the front desk with a card that says, "Congratulations, saved." The debate over federal consultation with corporations created under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and tribes continued yesterday at a meeting of the Federal Subsistence Board. The chairman said the policy on consultation with ANCSA corporations is based on an addition to a 2005 appropriations bill, so the board has to follow the law. Jacqueline Estes has more on the story.
Lisa Wade is Health and Social Services Director for the Chickaloon Village Traditional Council. She testified the policy on consultation with ANCSA corporations violates federal Indian law, as well as the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. 7 minutes into her testimony, Federal Subsistence Board Chairman Tim Tuarek interrupted.
If you're going to be talking about congressional issues, this is the wrong place to do it. You need to be talking to Senator Begich and Senator Murkowski and Representative Don Young. That's how far up it is. We're down here at the local level, and we have no authority over the big stuff.
And I agree with that from one perspective, but I also would say that you're here to discuss something, and I want you to understand from our tribal perspective what this means to us as a tribal people.
You're going to have to do it under our terms then.
After a few minutes of back and forth with Wade asking if she could be heard and Tuarek saying only if she limited her comments, she wrapped up.
Corporations will never be spiritually, culturally, or historically connected to the land, the wildlife, the waters, like tribal people are. And I just urge you not to go down this path.
Later, the board adopted a policy on consultation with tribes. It's holding off on adopting the policy on consultation with ANCSA corporations until the Department of Interior finalizes its policy on the matter. An attorney for the Department of Interior Solicitor's Office, Ken Lord, says consultation with ANCSA corporations and tribes will be weighted differently.
And our advice to this board and other agencies is that when weighing how much to consider an entity's input into a process, you can also weigh its interests. So if a particular corporation, an ANCSA corporation, for example, has less interest in a subsistence issue than a tribe does, which would seem to be the case most of the time, you can weigh that accordingly.
The tribal consultation policy states two-way communications are to occur before a decision affecting a tribe is implemented. Representatives of villages and village corporations for Northway, Tanacross, Dot Lake, and Tetlin testified that didn't happen recently when the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service drafted a deal trading land for a two-mile right-of-way for the Agia pipeline through the Tetlin Wildlife Refuge in exchange for $500,000 to be used to purchase more land for the refuge. Tribal attorney Robert Breen says the agency is proceeding even though Governor Parnell recently shifted away from a big gas pipeline through Canada to a smaller diameter one ending in south central Alaska. And in Breen's view, the exchange would violate the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act.
If I were on this board, it caused me alarm to have the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service continuing to perpetrate a land exchange that's no longer necessary in violation of Title 11 of ANILCA. Because when that happens, it will end up at this board's table to deliberate the negative impacts of a lack of consultation, a consultation gone awry, a travesty, and a breach of Title 11 of ANILCA.
The Federal Subsistence Board heard 44 minutes of testimony on this issue, although Tuareg said the land exchange also is outside its jurisdiction. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
The question of whether former Ketchikan Borough Mayor Jack Shea, a convicted felon, should be recognized in any borough facility will be taken up by the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly next month. Assemblymember Glenn Thompson yesterday requested that two items be added to an upcoming agenda.
The first one is, shall a framed photo or any likeness of Jack Shea be displayed in any way on borough property? And the second question is, shall any recognition of Jack Shea's prior service to the borough be recognized in any public displays, including any lists of prior elected officials, etc., on any borough property?
Last November, Shea was charged with 91 counts of possession of child pornography. April 30th, he pled guilty to 7 of those counts as part of a plea agreement, and Shea's sentencing hearing is scheduled for August 3rd. Thompson says since Shea is now a convicted felon, he should not be acknowledged by the borough.
Given the seriousness of Mr. Shea's crimes, betrayal of the community's trust, the deceptive nature of his acts, you know, community outrage, for all those reasons, this needs to be put to bed. And in my opinion, the man should be shunned. And that's why I framed the questions as I have.
Thompson says in addition to his own concerns, he has received complaints from the public. Photos of the current and past mayors hang on a wall in Ketchikan Borough Assembly Chambers. After Shea pled guilty, his photo was taken from the wall but later returned. After receiving comments from the public, Borough Mayor Dave Kiefer directed that the photo be removed. Kiefer proposed that a list of borough chairmen and mayors be placed on the wall to provide a historical account of borough leadership. 80-year-old Shea is a former mayor of both the borough and city of Ketchikan. He was a city council member at the time of his arrest. Shea resigned from the council shortly after.